We come now to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is set in the time of the judges, and it gives us a stark contrast to the failures of the time of the judges. It's a delightful story, and it shows us that in an era of selfishness, there was yet thoughtfulness for others. In an era of unfaithfulness to God, there still was faithfulness to God in Israel. And it tells us also that God was caring for such people and that he was guiding the ordinary everyday affairs in their lives for their good. Now the setting is given in the opening verses. We'll read the first five verses and that will tell us where the story is going. It tells us to start with that in the days of the judges, and so that gives us our era, there was a famine in the land. That is, there was a famine in the land of Judah where these people lived. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab. Moab was to the east of Israel. It bordered the eastern tribes of Israel on the other side of the Jordan River. So this man and his wife and his two sons went to Moab. Verse 2, the man's name was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites, that is, they belonged to the clan of these people. The Ephrathites were one clan of the tribe of Judah, and they lived in the town of Bethlehem in Judah. So they went into the country of Moab, and they remained there. Verse 3, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. She was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one of the wives was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. But verse 5 tells us that both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman, Naomi, was bereft of her two sons and her husband. You read the story on, and at the end of these 10 years, they decided, or Naomi decided, that she would return to Bethlehem. Her two daughters-in-law said that they would go with her. But Naomi said to these girls, no, there's no need, there's nothing for you back there. You stay where you are. Don't feel obligated at all to go with me. But verse 10, they said to her, no, we will return with you and to your people. But verse 11, and this is the key verse on which the whole book turns, Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Here she's referring to the custom which you'll find developing as the story moves on, and that was that when a man died and he left no children, his nearest living male relative was to become what you might call a sort of temporary husband to the widow, with the aim of producing through the widow a child. And that child would then carry on the inheritance and the family name of the deceased husband. In other words, the child would be looked upon not as the child of the man who had actually fathered it, but looked upon as the child of the man who had died. And so that child would inherit the family property and would carry on the family name. It was a matter of great importance to the Israelites that somebody should carry on the family name and inheritance. And there was no greater disaster could overtake anybody than for his family name and inheritance to be blotted out. Well, Naomi says, I have no other sons that can marry you, so what's the point? There's no future at all in going back with me. One of the daughters, Orpah, decides that she won't go back with Naomi to Israel, but the other one, Ruth, decides that she will. So in verse 15, after Orpah has decided to stay in her native Moabite territory, Naomi says to Ruth, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. So not only is she going to be devoted to her mother-in-law and to seek to look after her, but she has also become a convert to the God of Israel. Remember that Ruth is from a non-Israelite people, from the land of Moab, from the people of Moab. But now she has come to see that Naomi's God is to be her God. And so they return. And the rest of the chapter tells us how Naomi comes back, and with her, Ruth. And the people of Bethlehem are shocked when they see the misfortune which has befallen the family. Widows, of course, in those days had no social benefits handed on to them by the government. They were looked upon as people who had to be provided for by the community because they had no secure way of earning a living. One of the laws that God gave for the care of these people was that when a person reaped the harvest, the reapers were not to go through the harvest a second time to pick up all the grain, all the stalks that had fallen. These were to be left for the poor of the land, the widows and the fatherless, and those who had no other means of income, for these people to go through and to glean and to pick up the stalks and so get their provisions of food. So Naomi suggested to Ruth that she go gleaning. You come to chapter 2 then, and we're introduced here to a man called Boaz. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Verse 2, Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favour." Let me go somewhere where I can glean in the field of some kind person. So she said, okay, go. In verse 3, she went forth to glean, and it happened that she came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. And so here you can see how God was overruling. And he happened to be of the family of Elimelech. Verse 4, we find that Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you," and they answered, "The Lord bless you." And this is a way of greeting each other every morning. One of the things that impresses me as we read this book is the politeness, you might say, but the way that people use the name of God so frequently, and I don't think it's simply a glib way of using the name of God. We all know that there are people around who talk about the Lord led this and the Lord something else, and sometimes you get the impression that they're using the name of God rather glibly and not altogether sincerely. On the other hand, you do meet some people who are so genuine that God means everything to them, and they use it very genuinely indeed. And sometimes you come away from people like that and you feel refreshed and challenged when you see the intimacy of their relationship with God. I believe that Boaz and the people we're reading about in this story belong to that latter category. And they're using the name of God because their lives are lived indeed in the fear of God. Also, Boaz is not one of those people who's going to spit upon his employees, so to speak. And in a day such as those ancient times when employees were more or less the dirt under the feet of the employers, what a refreshing change it is to find here a man who speaks to his employees as equals. And so it gives us another insight into the generosity of the heart of this man Boaz. In verse 5 he asked who this maiden is. In verse 6 the man in charge of the reapers said, "It is the Moabite maiden who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And so you can find here that Boaz learns of Ruth's kindness to Naomi. The man goes on in verse 7, she said, "Pray let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." And so she came, and she's continued from early morning until now without resting even for a moment. Boaz finds out then that Ruth not only is considerate and thoughtful for her mother-in-law, but also that she is very diligent and hard-working. So Boaz goes to have a few words with Ruth. One thing that I like here is the complete absence of any sign of prejudice in Boaz. Remember that Ruth was not an Israelite. She was from Moab. And there was a tradition of animosity between the Israelites and the Moabites. You can go back to the stories of the book of Numbers, and you'll find that when the Israelites were coming on their journey towards Canaan, through a very dry and desolate countryside, they asked the Moabites for provisions, and the Moabites refused them bread and they refused them water. By contrast, here you have an Israelite who gives to the Moabite both bread and water. If you look at verse 9, the last few words, it says how he invites Ruth to go and drink whenever she feels like refreshing her thirst, and in verse 14 he also invites her to eat some bread. The Moabites historically hated the Israelites, and it was natural for the Israelites to respond with hatred. But here is a man who you might say is expressing the Christian ideal. That's an ideal that was also taught in the law of Moses, that we are not to be vindictive to our enemies, but rather to love them. The Moabites were those who hired Balaam to come and try to destroy Israel. We found out earlier in the book of Judges how that in the reign of Eglon, king of Moab, the Moabites oppressed Israel for 18 years. The Israelites had very good cause to respond vindictively to the Moabites, but you find none of it here in the man Boaz. As you read on, in verse 9, he says, "Let your eyes be upon the field which they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to molest you?" Boaz was well aware that some of the lusty young men around the place were not to be trusted. And so he took particular care to protect Ruth from any unsavoury advances on the part of some of his employees. And so he goes on providing her food and drink. Verse 10, "She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favour in your eyes that you should take notice of me when I am a foreigner?'" You see, she realises that she's a Moabite, that she's a foreigner. She realises that racism was just as great an evil then as it is now. It's terrible sometimes how even Christians can let their prejudices carry over in their relations to others. And their thinking becomes coloured. Their viewpoint is coloured because of ideological biases, when really we are told that regardless of whether people are enemies of us or not, we are still to love them and to act kindly towards them. So she says, "Why do you take notice of me when I'm a foreigner?" And Boaz in verse 11 answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me. How you left your father and mother in your native land and came to a people that you did not know before." And so he knows all about her great self-sacrifice. "The Lord recompense you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." That's a very noble sentiment to express there. The Lord recompense you for what you have done. But Boaz was not one of those people who glibly said, "Oh, the Lord will bless you, the Lord will provide." He realized that he might be the way through which the Lord would provide. And there are many people, again, who very glibly talk about God doing this, and God will do that, and God will provide something else, and God will give mercy, and God will give strength, and they don't really know anything about it. What they don't realize sometimes is that it may be through them that God will provide. And so Boaz doesn't simply say, "The Lord recompense you and bless you." He also takes steps to see that the girl is recompensed and that she is blessed. For when you read on further, coming down to verse 16, he tells his workers to make sure that they drop a few extra handfuls as they go along and pull out some of the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. Boaz was not one of those people who, if a brother or sister was ill clad or in lack of daily food, came to him and he responded by saying, "Go in peace, be warmed and filled," but didn't give the things needful for the body. That's a sort of a quote, you might say, from the book of James. You know the story there, where James says, if a person comes and he's destitute or he's hungry, and someone says to him, "Go in peace, be warmed and filled," without giving the things that are needful for the body, what does that profit? Faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Boaz's faith wasn't dead. In fact, I think he would be one of those that are possibly referred to in Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, when the Lord blesses them and says, "You visited me when I was in prison. You clothed me when I was naked. You fed me when I was hungry." And they said, "Lord, when did we do that?" And the response comes, "In that you did it to the least of my brethren, you did it unto me." Boaz does it indeed to Ruth. He not only prays that the Lord will bless her, but he himself demonstrates his faith in God by his actions. And as a result of Boaz's generosity and Ruth's diligence, she took home quite a lot of grain. And when Naomi heard her story, you can see the glint in Naomi's eye in verse 20. Naomi said to her, "Blessed be he by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a relative of ours, one of our nearest kin." Well, time passes on and the summer comes to an end, the harvest is over, and people are winnowing and threshing. Naomi is concerned for Ruth's future. Naomi also is a delightful person. She's not one that just sucks in the generosity of others. She doesn't wallow around in her own self-pity. She doesn't create needs that have to be fulfilled so that she is always drawing upon the emotions of others. No, she, having received much assistance from Ruth, is correspondingly concerned for Ruth, and she wants to make some sort of provision for Ruth's future. Ruth is not married. She has no children. She has no place to live. Boaz is the nearest of kin. Well, you can see what's going through Naomi's mind. Boaz has paid more than a passing interest in Ruth.